Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of the Casino City Gang for July 18th, 2011. I'm Dan Igo, and I'll be your host today, live from Casino City Studios, just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And I'm joined by Vin Narayanan, who is live in Las Vegas, providing coverage for Casino City at the WSOP main event. A very good early good morning to you, Vin.
Good morning, Dan.
It is 8 o'clock out in Vegas right now, 11 o'clock here outside of Boston. Vin, I'm assuming, was up late last night providing some coverage of the main event, so he's going to be, I think he's probably only running on a few hours sleep. So once again, please excuse him if he's sounding a little groggy. He's been working hard
for
us out there. we hope to be joined by Aaron Todd sometime in the next hour or so to provide some insight on the WSOP live broadcasts on ESPN. But we're going to begin with the main event, which saw an opening field of over 6,800 get whittled down to 57 last night. Your chip leader right now is Ryan Lenihan. I'm probably pronouncing it correctly.
Lenihan.
Who is a, according to the Hendon Mob, he's got about 10 caches, none in WSOP events. They're mostly smaller events. I think the big story, though, is the guy who's second in chips right now, and that's Ben Lamb. He's continued his epic WSOP heater straight into the main event. He is now first in the WSOP Player of the Year standings and is surely the man to watch at the Rio right now. Now, Vin, you're one of the people watching Lamb. You've been watching him for the last few days. How impressive is his run?
His run is so impressive that run like Ben Lamb has been entered into poker lexicon. That's how impressive he is. You have other people, when they get cards, saying, I'm running like Ben Lamb. It's really unbelievable. And to a certain degree, it does a disservice to how good a player Ben Lamb really is, because Ben Lamb is having a phenomenal summer. Yesterday was a remarkable display of poker. While other players were winning gigantic pots to jump up into the chip lead, Ben Lamb wasn't doing that. Ben Lamb was just winning pots. And he just kept winning pots. He'd pick up blinds, and he's a little pot here, a little pot there. And all of a sudden, his 5 million chip stack went to 8 million, and then 10 million, and then 10.98 million. It was a remarkable display of poker. Meanwhile, you had a couple other players just win gigantic pots to vault their way to the top. You had Phil Collins, not the singer, felt four players in the span of 2.5 hours. It was actually pretty remarkable to see. He was sitting over at the feature table and felt four players in the span of 2.5 hours. All four players had lots of chips. And so he became the first player to crack the 10 million barrier. But Ben Lamb was on his tail, so he didn't take off, and he fell back to the pack, and it was just remarkable to see. Now, Ben Lamb and Collins weren't playing at the same table, and neither were Ryan Lenihan and Ben Lamb, two different tables, but it was fun to see. And Ryan Lenihan ended up in the chip lead because this guy, Brian Folian, thought it would be a great idea to call off a $4 million bet with almost nothing. I'm still in shock. I mean, yeah, all right, he had ace-queen, all right. But how do you put all of your chips into play with ace-queen? I just don't get it. It's remarkable. And Lenihan had jacks, and Lenihan had 8 million or so chips at that point. And so, all right, I can see Lenihan pushing all in to put some pressure on Folian, but calling? Oh, my goodness gracious. I know a lot of people sitting in the Amazon room were going, holy cow, what was happening there? So it was an interesting day. Yeah, yesterday, day six is the day where friends and family start to show up, because the money starts becoming real. Not to say that $45,000 or $55,000 isn't real money or anything like that, but when you start getting to the $100,000 range, it starts feeling really real. And that's what happened yesterday. Players were winning in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, winning at least $100,000at some point yesterday, and you had friends and family showing up. And so you were starting to get some loud boosterism in the crowd. And the candidate for most annoying rail so far goes to Phil Collins. a lot of just annoying, over-the-top, profane language, and a lot of discussion of smelly farts. And if you're in the vicinity, it's just not a lot of fun to watch poker when that's going on. But that's okay. It was an interesting day yesterday overall. But yeah, what Ben Lamb is going through is remarkable. He's first in the Player of the Year race. He passed Phil Hellmuth yesterday, and with this deep run, and with the World Series of Poker Europe coming forward, who knows what he's going to put together. But Ben Lamb has replaced Eric Seidel as the guy with the hottest run in poker right now.
Yeah, in case you listeners out there aren't too familiar with Ben Lamb, this has been his big breakthrough. He back in 2009, he finished in 14th in the main event, and that was by far his best finish in any tournament. But this has happened within the last 31 days, month and a day. June 17th, he finished second in a $3,000 pot limit Omaha event, won almost $260,000. The following week, he finished first in a $10,000 pot limit Omaha championship, won over $800,000. 3 days after that, finished 12th in a $10,000 no limit hold'em six-handed championship event, won $56,000. And then right after that, he final tabled the Poker Players Championship, the $50,000 event, finished in eighth, and finished with $201,000. So really, it hasn't been an entire World Series that this guy has been, having results. It's been within the last month, and he's been having fantastic results. Now,
and I'll tell you what, he even said on Twitter that he realized he's running well.
Yeah,
which I thought
yeah,
was
he is
very
a big
funny.
Twitter guy. I have noticed that. He is a big Twitter guy. A lot of the younger pros have been tweeting back and forth with him, and that's been a big hashtag, I guess, run like Ben Lamb. But one of the big stories I've been following, ever since I got back from Vegas, which was on Friday, was Eric Lindgren, who, the last time I was, covering the main event, I saw him with like 3,000 in chips on his day two. And, I thought it was only a matter of time before, he busted out like so many of the other pros that, get short stacked in this event. And then he slowly started chipping up. And now he's got, over $1 million in chips, almost $2 million, I believe. And he, he's not a huge chip stack like Ben Lamb or Phil Collins, but he's a guy who, he's got a lot of experience in these tournaments. He's a former WSOP Player of the Year. What's the vibe been around Lindgren the last few days then?
Lindgren's been in a pretty good mood, and who can blame him? As you know, he had, I think, 3,700 in chips, chipped up to several hundred thousand that day before moving on. He doubled early yesterday to pick up some more chips. And here's a guy, that's one of the best pros out there. This is the deepest run he's ever been in the main event. He said that, look, I've waited a long time to get here, and he's trying to take advantage of it now that he's there. And so he's going to be hanging on to those chips with tooth and nail, trying to get to the final table. This is a big deal for him, and he hasn't hidden the fact that this is a big deal for him. So it's been interesting to watch what's going on with him. He plays it close to the vest, and when he has that, when he finds those opportunities to double up, he takes advantage of it. And just so people understand from a chip count where Eric Lindgren is he one of the smaller stacks in the room? Yeah, he is. But if you take a look at the chip stacks of, say, the November 9 last year, then you have you have people getting into the November 9 with 7 million in chips, 9 million in chips last year. Those were your two small chip stacks. A couple years ago, Phil Ivey made it in with 6 or 7 million in chips. And so you could, I mean, he's got 2.5 million right now. If he's able to climb up a few more million, I mean, he's putting himself in a position where he can make the final table. And he's got the skills to do it. He's one of the best players in the world. He's one of the most experienced players in the world. But there's no reason why he can't do it. I mean, bad luck is going to be the most important reason why he can't do it. He can't bait a couple of draws when he's got his money in good. But outside of that, Eric Lindgren's got as good a chance as any to make it. And if he does make it, it's going to be one of the best storylines of the tournament. It's going to be right up there with Ben Lamb. And you want to know what? The ESPN cameras will have missed the first day of his comeback because they weren't shooting that day. And they probably had no idea. But that's why you shoot, because you don't know. And so, it's interesting. There are a lot of people out there rooting for him. He's sort of the biggest name pro that's still in the field, the guy with the biggest name recognition. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I know a lot of people root for him, and we'll go. Eric Lindgren was also involved in a bit of a controversy yesterday. And, I mean, controversy probably too strong a word, but it works. In that he was playing at one of the outer tables for most of the day. Players went off for dinner break for the first 4 hours of the day. Players went off for dinner break, and when they came back, Eric Lindgren found out that he'd been moved to the ESPN feature table, the televised table. And in the big arena inside the Amazon room. And so he goes there and he looks at his chip stack and he doesn't see 2.8 million. He sees 2.5 million. And he goes, I'm short 300,000. What's going on here? And tournament's paused, stopped the clock immediately, and said, well, let's figure this out. So the tournament officials, what happened was the tournament supervisors had moved the chips to the feature table during the dinner break so they could set everything up because ESPN is doing live broadcasts. And the live broadcasts have, there's a clock associated with it. You have to be in on time. You have to start the tables on time. You have to get out on time and all that sort of stuff. That's the nature of live broadcasting. So So they moved it to facilitate the move. That way they weren't worried about the players moving and getting back to time and getting things done. And he said, I'm short 300,000. And they totally went and looked at their own chip counts. Said, no, these are the same amount of chips we moved. They looked at some independent chip counts and said, yeah, no, this is how much you had. And then they went to the surveillance tape. And they said, well, let's see, did we actually move anything? And they determined, no, we didn't lose anything. So here's the surveillance tape. Every chip that was at this table made it to the feature table. And they were very careful with the surveillance tape when they were moving it. They made sure that they were under surveillance the entire time. And so Lindgren accepted it and said, all right, I miscounted by 300K. And that's that. But you could tell he wasn't happy with the fact that his chips had been moved while he wasn't there. Because on Twitter he said, well, why were they allowed to move my chips even though I wasn't there? And so I understand the reason why logistics, it worked all as well as ends well. He didn't lose any chips. He was fine, but it's one of those things where it's a lesson in that you've got to be careful when you're moving these chips. And maybe a solid precaution is that you want to know what? You realize that you're moving this table. You do it before they go to dinner. And you say, you want to know what? We're moving you guys. It's a two-hour dinner break. Let's just take the time to move those chips over to the feature table now. And maybe that's a good precaution moving forward. But it's been an interesting World Series so far, that's for sure. There's one other sort of interesting note on the TV front, which is one player. A French player was a bit unhappy with the TV cameras, I think is a good way to put it. And he was at an outer table and just raked in a decent-sized pot and or was in He mucked his cards, and the ESPN producer says, "Hold on, you can't muck your cards," and pulls him out. And this guy just gets ticked off. He says, "What do you mean I can't muck my cards?" And the ESPN crews this year, because it's a new production company, they're doing a couple of new things. And one of the new things they're doing is they have a mini hole card cam for the outer tables. And the way this hole card cam works is after a hand is over, the cards haven't been revealed. They'll put the hole card cam down on the table so players can flash the cards to the camera. That way, the producers know what the cards are when they're going back into post-production and editing the shows together and stitching them together. It's an interesting new dynamic to the table, and I think poker players are going to like it. Before, with the previous production company, you had a hand at the outer table. You never knew what the guys had. Now you do. And so he thought this was on a live stream. He was on a live table yesterday, and he didn't want the players at his table to have any idea what cards he had, and he refused to show it to them. And he stood off with the tournament officials. And he says, "I don't have to show my cards. Why should anyone have to show their cards?" And they said, "Well, you signed a contract that said with Rule 24. He's like, "Let me see that. Let me see that." And so finally they come and I said, "Look, this isn't on a live stream. This player had been on the live streaming table the day before. This is on a live stream. No one's going to see this talk. Don't worry about it." And that seemed to calm him down. So he ended up flashing the whole cards to the camera really briefly, disappearing for a quick cigarette smoke to calm himself down.
Well, if that's not stereotype, I don't know what is.
I do my best to enforce all stereotypes. Reinforce all stereotypes.
Now, this would be the fourth year they do the November 9. It seems like every year there's usually one poker pro who makes the final table. The first year was Chino Ream, then Phil Ivey, then last year it was Michael Mizrachi. Other than Eric Lindgren, who are some of the other named pros we should be looking out for in the main event for the final few days?
Eric Lindgren's the big one.
Mm-hmm.
There really aren't any quote-unquote, really. I mean, Jean-Robert Ballon busted out yesterday. Elia Lezra busted out yesterday. Joseph Chung busted out yesterday. Alan Cunningham busted out yesterday. If you're looking for players you recognize, Elia Lezra's it. Christian Harder might still be.
I'm looking right now. If you're a poker pro or a poker fan, you should know who David Bach is. He won the 50K event a few years ago. He was, I believe, the chip leader a few days ago. Now he's got a little less than $2 million. JP Kelly is a pretty well-known British pro. He's got $3.7 million. And then you got everyone's favorite brother, Tony Hashem, Joe Hashem's brother. That would be an unbelievable story.
You're absolutely right about David Bach. David Bach had the unfortunate happenstance of winning the 50K event the year it wasn't televised.
Mm-hmm.
So people have no idea what a really good poker player this guy is. They also have no idea how much he's dropping on massages. I did the math. I think he spent $980 or $940, not including tips on massages yesterday.
His Hendon Mob photo is him getting a massage. That's his profile photo for the Hendon Mob. So the man does love a massage.
Yeah, I think it's hard to get a photo of him not getting a massage. But you're absolutely right. I'd forgotten about David Bach, and actually I'd forgotten about Tony Hashem. Not because Tony Hashem isn't memorable. It's just you don't really think about Tony Hashem. You don't. And there's not a really good reason for it. He's a perfectly fine poker player. He gets excitable. A couple days ago, he got coolered, and I wrote about this at CasinoCityTimes.com. But when he got coolered, he got his money in good. I think it was ace king versus ace queen or some sort of hand like that. But suffice it to say, he was ahead in the hand, and he lost the hand. He got all his money in pre-flop, and. Talking to the dealer, going, "You can't be serious, mate. Come on, You've quartered me twice. And so just walking around muttering after that certainly seems a lot more excitable than his brother Joe. That's for sure. And Joe was what, the 2005 main event champ. And so walked around, almost ran me over while he was muttering about being cleared. And this was, you know, well away from the table he was playing at. And I saw him being cleared. And then I, after, you know, a couple minutes of him talking about how he was being cleared, I couldn't take it. I was able to move out. But he's a nice enough guy. And I think you're right. He provides that name recognition. It would be fun to say. But, I mean, if you're talking about final tables, that would be fun. I mean, you throw David Bach, Eric Lindgren, Joe Hashem, and Ben Lamb in a final table. Now you're talking.
Yeah, those are some names that will draw the ratings. That will definitely be the most star-studded November 9 they've had so far.
But that never happens.
About a million things would have to go right for that to happen.
I mean, let's face it. Right now, we're waiting for two things. In this main event, we're waiting for the Darvin Moon run, where someone just catches on fire and has this enormous chip stack heading into the final nine. Last year was Jonathan Dumel. Obviously, a couple years ago was Darvin Moon. We're waiting for that sort of run, and we're waiting for the Billy Kopp moment, where a player with a massive chip stack just throws it all away in one hand. And besides the gamble when they've got 18 million or 16 million chips or 12 million chips, and just decides to gamble rather than cruise into the November 9. And then those are the two moments we're waiting for right now as we play down. We're going to play from 57 to 27 today. And those are the two moments we're sort of waiting for as we play down with November 9.
Now, one of the things I liked about your coverage so far in the main event, it was posted over the weekend. You talked to the chip leader at one point. His name is Manoj Viswanathan.
Yeah, Manoj Viswanathan.
So that was kind of close. So you talked to him. It's too bad the Casino City Curse was alive and well because he was knocked out the following day. But
I didn't mention the Casino City Curse when I talked to him.
No. Maybe you should have. Maybe he would have told you to shut up and would have ran away screaming. But you know, this is a very interesting story about a 20-something poker pro who, you know, you think of these 20-somethings, they're usually the online studs, but this guy kind of went through it in a completely different manner. Can you tell us a little bit about his story?
Yeah, Vishnu went to college at MIT, went to law school at NYU, and he started playing cards for fun at MIT because, as he put it, well, everyone at MIT plays cards for fun. And that was pretty, and so he started playing poker. He had a good time. He had a little bit of time off between MIT and law school and decided and played some more cards there, but it never really became more serious than that, and he just had a good time playing. And so he'd always wanted to enter the main event, but thought $10,000 was just a ludicrous waste of money given how low the odds were. And so he's talking to his friends about it, and the friends apparently thought he was a good enough poker player. They said, look, if we put up half, will you put up half? And he said, sure. And so all of a sudden the main event became, rather than an individual sport, became a team sport with all of his friends railing him, and it was interesting. I mean, it was interesting for him. He generally found that team aspect of it a lot of fun. He enjoyed being part of a team. He enjoyed playing for the team, and he was having a good time doing it. So, I asked him if he played online poker, and he said he dabbled a tiny bit with it, but not really. It wasn't his thing. And he said he never really got into poker full-time because he's got so many other things he really likes to do and really loves to do. And so there you have it. This was the old-school amateur poker player showing up with a dream of winning the main event. And he said, yeah, he'd always wanted to play in it. And he made a run at it, and he grabbed the chip lead, and then he lost the chip lead. He lost the chip lead in a hurry. I mean, he was the chip leader at the end of the day, and the next day all of his chips were gone. And he was a chip leader with a couple million in chips, and he said that you want to know what, I'm going to stay aggressive and try to win the thing, and he did. He stayed aggressive and tried to win the thing. He just kept running into bigger hands. And he wasn't running into bigger hands with nothing. It's his queens were running into kings, or his eighth queen was running into eighth king. It just happened. And so it's a shame he went out. He sent me a nice little email saying, sorry I didn't stick around longer to make your story better. But it's a shame he went out. But it was an interesting story. It was nice to see that there are still players, and I think it speaks to the power of the World Series of Poker, that it draws players like Manila Trishanatha, people who just enjoy playing poker. They know that the World Series of Poker is the marquee event in the game, and that if they can cobble enough money together, they'll take a shot at a dream once. And if you get 1,000 people like that, every year, you're doing all right. And that's one of the remarkable things about the World Series of Poker main event, is it draws players like that. And not only does it draw players like that, but as Manoj Vishal proved, you've got a shot to get into the Chipley, and if you can get into the Chipley, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Unless
and
you're
like,
playing in the year of Ben Lamb.
Yes. Then you just avoid him and hope to get your table broken up. And you get moved somewhere else, and you can continue trying to chip up. I mentioned earlier that every November 9th final table has had a guy who kind of holds the torch for the poker pros. I think the same can be said for the shot in the darks, the amateurs. You know, you had Dennis Phillips, you had Darvin Moon, you had Soy Wynn last year, and chances are we don't know who that person is yet. He's playing still. He's won the final 57. But I always find those stories among the most fascinating. Heading into the November 9, is not the not the online grinders, not the poker pros who've been going at it for 15 or 20 years. You know, those stories are still great, but there are very few opportunities in sports. I don't know if you consider poker a sport, but where a no name an amateur can put up $10,000. And, within 7 days be a household name and be fighting for a world championship. I think that's what makes poker so unique. It's kind of an everyman game.
It's an everyman game. Every woman's game. Erica Moutinho, who's the last woman standing in this year's World Series Poker Man event, has a little over a couple million chips. Her boyfriend is Doc Sands.
Mm-hmm.
Doc Sands is a real online poker pro. Doc Sands also alive and well. They were actually at the same table briefly at the end of yesterday, which is kind of interesting. But Erica Moutinho has almost always had more chips than Doc Sands this tournament as well, which has given her bragging rights in the house. But she's one of those players. She's not a pro. She's an amateur. Who knows if she ever would have played poker if it wasn't for being with Doc Sands. And yet here she is, good for her. She's got 2 million chips, last woman standing, with a reasonable shot of reaching the final 27. And we haven't had a woman reach the final 27 since Leo Margetts a couple years ago. And if Erica Moutinho does reach the final 27, one Aaron Todd owes us something.
Yeah.
He took the over, we took the under. She's got a reasonable shot as any. And speaking of Leo Margetts, the one funny thing that I know to Leo Margetts was, and she's no longer in the tournament, but the story remains funny, is while she was still in the tournament, the World Series of Poker has gone to 2-hour dinner breaks after the day one. So starting... starting with day three, they went to 2-hour dinner breaks to accommodate the TV schedule for the live coverage on ESPN2. And in these 2-hour TV schedules, that's a lot of time for dinner. The media loves it because it gives them a lot of time to write. But I went to the poker kitchen for dinner, which is now closed, by the way. I'm sure you're sad, Dan. No more CCP is for fit. So went to the poker kitchen for dinner. The poker kitchen is basically a ballroom where they set up Pizza Hut, a Mexican place, a sushi place, a Chinese food place, a salad place, where you could grab some quick food, sit down and eat, and go on to do your business, whether it was playing another poker tournament or write about it or whatever you wanted to do. And Leo Margetz and her crew had taken over the poker kitchen. And you finished 27th in the main event a couple of years ago. You have more money than I think all these people in the room combined, yet you and your 30 friends are here eating in the poker kitchen. It was an interesting sight. One, that she and her crew were there, and two, that she had a crew of 30 to follow her to the poker kitchen to eat. It was absolutely fantastic. It was quite the sight.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Well, you're there at the main event. You're not in front of a TV, but the good thing about this year's main event is, as long as you have a cable connection, as long as you get ESPN2, if you have an internet connection, get ESPN3. That's even better. But this is the first year that ESPN's been providing live coverage of the main event. They started on day three, as we talked about on last Thursday. Day 2B, there weren't a lot of cameras around because they were setting up the live stream broadcast. Now, I've seen, I've probably seen an hour or so of coverage, here and there. I was lucky enough to be able to listen to Antonio Esfandiari provide coverage. He was the color guy, I guess, as you'd say if you're using a baseball term. But I thought he was very impressive. It seems like he was he was born to do something like this. He's very easygoing. He's he's able to provide analysis without being too technical. I think with some players you'd run into them being a little too math heavy. They'd be talking a little too the poker terminology wouldn't appeal to the common fan, but I thought he was very impressive so far with his broadcast. Now I know you haven't seen any of the live stream broadcasts yet, but at the main event at the Rio, what has been the vibe like in terms of players wanting to get on the featured table, not wanting to get on the featured table, being able to use video from the featured table to look at hands? Has it been a positive experience or a negative experience, do you think?
Well, the poker pros absolutely love it. I'm talking the big-name poker pros. Phil Hellmuth, Daniel Negreanu, Eric Lindgren. They think it's the coolest thing in the world. They are absolutely in love with it. Phil Hellmuth came back the other day to do play-by-play. To go in the studio with Lon, and you saw him walk through the Amazon room and shake a few hands with some of the people that he knew before heading back into the studio to provide some analysis. They absolutely love it. Daniel Negreanu, during a break when he was on the feature table, and he was on the feature table for a long time, went back to wherever he goes back to, his trailer most likely, and watched the ESPN 2 live coverage and did some homework on his table. So he absolutely loved it too. Phil Hellmuth calls this live coverage, the future of poker. There's definitely that camp that absolutely loves it. Eric Lindgren loves it. And so your bigger name guys who are used to being on TV, who understand that television has made poker what it is today. Poker as a game, there are two components to why poker is so popular today. One is online poker, the other is television. Both of those components are critical to making poker the game it is today in terms of size, popularity, prize pools, and things like that. And I think there's an interesting thing going out there with, in terms of perception with the poker players who aren't on TV regularly. And who play primarily online, is they view online poker as the reason poker is the game it is today and don't really give that much credit to television. They take a look at the numbers before online poker and after online poker in terms of participation and tournament size and say, look, online poker is what's driving this. And yes, online poker is a major component, but I think that does that short shrifts TV. TV is a large part of this as well. And so a lot of the young pros don't like TV cameras. They tolerate them, but they're not necessarily happy with them, and they're not necessarily happy with the live streaming. they're not necessarily happy with the fact that 30 minutes after they bluff someone, their hand might be shown on camera. And they're not pleased with it. And so it's an interesting dichotomy. And that's not all of them, but some of them. And enough of them that you notice. And the bigger name calls are like, oh, this is great. But a lot of these other guys feel like they're giving away trade secrets. I tend to fall on the side of TV on this one. TV's a critical component of this. It makes for great coverage. And let's face it, the World Series of Poker, is there a big poker tournament? Yes. You want to know what else it is besides a big poker tournament? It's an even bigger TV show. And that's where it is right now. You know what you sign up for when you come to this. I mean, a lot of them think they're coming to play in the biggest poker tournament in the world, and they are. But the biggest poker tournament in the world also happens to be the biggest televised poker tournament in the world. And it's a bigger TV show than it is poker tournament at this point. And that's the nature of it. And so you sort of have to flow with it. And I'm going to be curious. I haven't seen any of the live coverage. At some point I'm going to plug into the live coverage, plug my headphones in the feature table and listen to what's going on right now. Because right now when I head over to the feature table, they've got this great stat tracker, a live stat tracker, which I absolutely love. Keeps track of all the action for me. And because the media perch is a little hot, is up high like it is in most stadiums in this particular poker arena, it's up high. So you can't necessarily tell what's going on at the table at all times. You've got a good view of it, but you can't count the chips or anything like that or necessarily see the whole cards. And so this keeps track of all the action for you. So I find myself watching that more than I do the video monitor or the flop or anything else. And so I think I'm going to plug myself one of these days into the table chatter and hear what's going on. I was there yesterday at the feature table for watching Phil Collins for a bit, but frankly, that table wasn't very interesting. They weren't talking a lot. Phil Collins was just running people over, and it was pretty boring. But I plan on going back. Hopefully we'll have a couple more interesting tables that I can plug into, and I'll get at least a better sense for the table chatter, if not the the live stream.
Now, for those who haven't seen the live stream, our very own Aaron Todd will be compiling a top 10 observations about the live stream. It will be in the Casino City Times newsletter tonight, and you should be getting in your email your email boxes tonight or tomorrow morning. He said he has
hours and hours of it in his DVR.
Yeah, hours and hours of his DVR is consumed by this main event coverage. One of the observations I've read, not from poker message boards, but more general sports message boards, blogs, that are focused on other things, but still talk about poker, is they don't know how a casual fan will be hooked on to this live coverage. It's really, really tough. I only got into poker after the boom, one of the main reasons a lot of people got in was, being able to see whole cards. And, they only show the whole cards if there's a showdown after the flop. With this main event coverage. Do you think that this this live coverage, it probably, I would think it wouldn't go away anytime soon. Do you think it's going to evolve where TV personnel will want to show more and more? And then do you think eventually there will be blowback from poker players that they don't want to show too much? Or do you think TV is going to trump all?
Well, a lot of it depends on ratings, let's face it. I don't know what the ratings are. And this is a big ratings gamble for ESPN. Because the reason poker's on ESPN, the reason poker does well on ESPN is two-part. One is it does reasonably well in the ratings when the first episodes are put out. But it does even better during reruns. And the reruns of poker outstrip, strongman competitions and spelling bees and whatever else you can throw in there to fill the gaps in the ESPN sporting schedule. And so that's why it's on television. And Dan, you're 100% right. Poker as a televised sport didn't take off until everyone could see the whole cards. That's what made poker fun to watch. You knew what the whole cards were, and you could play along. And figure out what the decision was and criticize play and do all that sort of stuff. It is much more difficult to do that on the live coverage. It's more difficult to get in. The live coverage is something that appeals to poker fans, to hardcore players, and the hardcore poker fans. They've been clamoring for this. They've been wanting this. That's the audience that ESPN hears from the most. Do I think that's the substantial part of the ESPN poker audience? No, I don't think so. This is going to be interesting to me. I don't have a good feel for what the ratings are. I do think it will be tough for casual poker fans to get into it, whereas for the casual poker fans, sitting down and watching any tape coverage of the WSOP main event is really easy. You've got the whole cards there. You've got the big players that you know and you've heard of there. You can fall in and out of it. You can watch it in a half hour waiting for SportsCenter to start up. You can watch it for an hour waiting for Baseball Tonight. And however you do it, it's just really easy to get into that coverage because the barriers of entry are low. In this case, I think the barriers of entry are much higher. Now, all of that said, I think we have a more sophisticated poker audience now than we did 4 or 5 years ago. And maybe they have an appetite for this, and maybe they're ready for this. I think we have to wait for the ratings to see. This is a very interesting time, and it's an interesting decision by ESPN to do it this way. Poker fans and hardcore poker fans absolutely love it. I'm not sure, and the ratings will tell us.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what the ratings are for this as well. The ESPN went. They didn't spare any expense advertising that the main event would be live. You know, I was on ESPN a lot this weekend with the British Open and the Women's World Cup both being on the network, and there were plenty of commercials, you know, advertising that for the first time ever, WSOP was going to be live on ESPN2 and ESPN3. So it's not like they tried to hide the fact that they were providing live coverage. And I think, you know, I'm not sure when these ratings come up, but I'm really looking forward to see what kind of response they get from, reading from what hardcore poker fans have been saying. They like it. You know, this is, a 2+2 fans, wet dream. They like being able to see, being able to see live poker, something that the Europeans have enjoyed for a little bit. This is the first time it's really happened in the States, especially on this big of a scale. And, ESPN, WSOP, they've usually been pretty right about these things. I think that we can all agree they've been right about the November 9. I think November 9 has been a great thing for poker. It was criticized in the beginning. Same with this live coverage. I think some poker players criticized it in the beginning because they were worried about, their secret tells being exposed. But, I have a feeling that, all in all, in the end, this will be seen as a positive for the WSOP.
Yeah, the WSOP is more right than it is wrong. And they went into this with their eyes wide open. So they clearly know some things that we don't. And it'll be interesting to see. I just know that even with analysis, poker can be a struggle to watch live. And that's why I'm curious what the reaction is going to be. But speaking of the Women's World Cup, I just want to throw this in here. One of the most interesting things that happened yesterday was the poker players, and not only the poker players, but everyone in the audience, they were into the Women's World Cup. The biggest roar in the room didn't come from a pot yesterday. It came when Abby Wambach scored the second goal for the U.S. To take a 2-1 lead. And then this was while play was going on, and then they went on a 25-minute break, and no one went on break. Everyone went straight to the TV to watch the end of stoppage time in the shootout. And a massive groan went when Japan tied the game on a great set piece, great corner kick, I guess in the 118th, 119th minute. And then the shootout, everyone was disappointed except for the handful of people that bet on Japan, who was getting 2-1 odds. So it was an interesting experience. Very few things managed to worm their way into the Amazon room while the main event was going on. The Women's World Cup was one of them.
Yeah, I remember last year the Men's World Cup was going, and that was that was on a lot of the TVs. And then the decision was last summer as well during the main event where LeBron, you know, decided to take his talents to South Beach, and they actually announced over the PA, you know, you couldn't really the volume was off on all the TV, so you could see him. You know, if you were close enough to a TV, you could see him mouth that he was going to join the Miami Heat. You know, there's a little bit of a pause, and then the announcement over the loudspeaker was just simply Miami. And then I think everyone knew, you know, what was happening there. But it's always, you know, always good to see, you know, sports kind of transcend, you know, poker. Everyone can worry about the main event for a while, but that was a hell of a game the U.S., you know, played yesterday in the Women's World Cup. It's a kind of a shame. They lost, and I'll tell you, if it was the men's team and they lost like that, I don't know when I'd be coming back to work. That would have been brutal if it was a men's game where I'm a much bigger fan of. But well, I'm glad you were able to see you know, most of the game being out in Vegas covering the WSOP.
Well, I wouldn't say most. I mean, I saw part of the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, it was covering the main event. I didn't really pick up the coverage until almost stoppage time started, and was able to carry that. But the reason I was every other poker player was sitting there in front of the TV watching it, and it really was remarkable just the level of interest there was there. I mean, these are players that had a lot of money on the line. I mean, you're talking trying to win $100,000 at this point yesterday, and they weren't worried about the money. They were into the game, and when I say into the game, they just weren't watching silently. I mean, these players knew what was going on. They were into it. They knew the players by name. They were rooting for them. Every type of scoring opportunity went by, they groaned. They were actively cheering on when it went into penalty kicks. People knew the order of the kickers. They knew who had missed and who had made from the Brazil pick. I mean, this was an actively participating audience. It was pretty remarkable to see. And the more active the audience came, you know, the more quiet the people that managed your fan became. So it was they didn't want to get beat up. But it was a few muted cheers at the end for the people that bet on Japan, and at least one person saying, "I'm never betting on the U.S. women again." So I thought that was pretty funny. But I will say this about the game, from just a fan's perspective, there's a whole roster, there's a long roster of great men's players that have just botched their PKs in the shootout, from Roberto Baggio to Michael Platini. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, it's a large number. And Diego Maradona, these are the greatest soccer players in the world. Taking PKs it's not easy. It's not easy. And when you put it in that sort of context, look, it's a lottery. That's what a shootout is, the lottery, and the U.S. women lost the lottery.
Well, one of the first bets I made when I was out in Vegas a couple weeks ago was betting on Brazil in Copa America to win it all. I got 7-5, and I was feeling real good about it after Argentina lost the day before on Saturday. They lost in PKs, and then yesterday Brazil was playing Paraguay. They went 0-4. On their PKs, with only one of the PKs hitting the net. So you got Brazil, arguably one of the best teams in the world, going 0-4 on PKs. You know, it's definitely not, they're not gimmies. So, you know, after seeing, you know, the U.S. losing PKs, and then literally 10 minutes later watching my bet go out in flames because of PKs again, PKs weren't my friend yesterday.
All right, now, because this is the Casino City gang, I've got to ask you this. How'd your action on the British Open go?
Not bad. It, you know, I made all the bets I made in Vegas lost. I think, Clark was a field bet, but, through a guy, I made two field bets. So which is, you know, you can usually bet on the top 40, 45 players, and then everyone else is considered the field. I bet two field bets, and Darren Clark fit into the field bet category. So I won $85. So
there
not bad.
Go. Good for you.
Yeah, not bad. So it could have been a lot worse. I was you know, part of me was rooting a lot of the guys who were right behind Clark I'm big fans of, like, you know, Mickelson, who had a great run on the first nine, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler, Anthony Kim. I like Darren Clark, too, but, you know, I usually root for the Yanks. But all in all, I think it was a good British Open. It couldn't happen to a better guy than Darren Clark, so I was glad to see him win.
Yeah, now, 42-year-old, and to be drinking a lot of something from the Claret Jug, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would be surprised if he has fallen asleep the last 24 hours. I know the guy likes to party, and I think it's going to be a 2 or 3 day type affair with him celebrating his first major win. Now, before we end the show, do you have anything that you're looking forward to seeing as we roll this field down to 27 today?
Yeah, I will say this. It's been interesting in that these guys have stayed aggressive throughout the entire tournament. Play hasn't slowed down at all. You're losing players quickly. I think yesterday was the slowest day in terms of action, and you went from 142 players to 57. This is it's remarkable. I mean, you lost more than half the field again yesterday, and you lost it in just four levels. It's absolutely remarkable, and that was almost slow play. David Bakken tweeted out at one point. I thought it was interesting. He says, "We've played four hands in the last 30 minutes." No, I don't mean I've played four hands in the last 30 minutes. I mean my table's played four hands in the last 30 minutes. And that counts as slow down play. And even at that rate, half the field disappeared. It's remarkable. Decisions are taking a lot longer. And so in that sense, play has slowed down. They've gone to the automatic shuffle machines at the table. You're getting more hands in than you normally would in this period, but I'm curious as to whether it's going to take a long time to play down from 57 to 27, because now you're talking significant money jumps. You're not going from 44 to 49 or something like that. I mean, these are big money jumps and hundreds of thousands of dollars at stake, and so I'm curious. I really am as to whether play is going to slow down at all, or whether it's just going to keep sipping along at a fast pace. I mean, most of these guys are pretty well ahead of the blind, so it's not like they have to be pushing all in all the time, yet you're seeing people willing to push all in on a coin flip. And so we'll see what happens. I think that's the thing that I'm looking at most today is what's going on with the pace of play. Are players continuing to fly out of here? Or are people playing at a more safe pace? And so we'll see what happens there.
Well, for all your main event coverage, be sure to go to CasinoCityTimes.com and online.CasinoCity.com. Vin, by hopefully tomorrow morning, it'll be down to 27 if it's going at the same pace he's talking about. Maybe this will be an early night for Vin. I'll keep my fingers crossed, but expect to see a recap of the final 27 sometime tomorrow morning on those two websites. And that will be it for us today at the special edition of the Casino City Gang, the last special edition of the Casino City Game. The next time we talk to you guys, we will have our November 9, and that will be on Thursday at 11 a.m. See you then. The music for Casino City Gang was provided by the PodSafe Music Network. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not endorse any illegal activity. Please follow all local, state, and federal laws concerning gambling.